Thank you very much. It's actually we are getting to the end of our stay here, which has been very good. So I thank the organizers for allowing us to be here because it's a very nice time. The two talks will be independent. The only common thing is that two of the authors are the same. Well, this title is Brainonium. You may guess what it is. It's just we just call that a bound state of brain anti-brain as a positronium. So, and people keep telling me that we should have added an E here, but well, otherwise they said it sounds like a serial. So, anyway, so the motivation is simple. Is that one of the thing that we have learned from the brain world is that we can treat universes like particles, and people have been entertaining the idea of colliding brains and so colliding universes, and so you can think about annihilation of universes or scattering and so on, and that's actually has but he can come out with the idea of deep brain inflation, and then the quadratic universe or deep brain and deep brain inflation and so on. And most of the discussion has actually been one-dimensional, just brains in one dimension, and so there's just collision. But in principle, generically, you have the brains have any co-dimension, so you can have lower-dimensional brains in a higher-dimensional universe, so you can consider the motion be more complicated. And so you can ask the question, you could discuss like things like brains going around each other, so that would be called solar systems of universes. And of course, the simplest case is that of a case of a brain and an anti-brain, and that's what we call Brainonium. So that's I will concentrate on that possibility today. So to formulate the system, what we consider is a set of D brains and D brains of any dimensionality, and with n large, so that will be the source object that will give it the geometry, and then put a probe anti-brain here that will be feeling the force due to the metric generated by these brains, and see study what is the motion of this anti-brain. For the source brains, DP brains, we have the metric is the well-known one in terms of the harmonic function H, which is 1 plus K over R to the 7 minus P. The Dilaton and the Ramon-Ramon form also have this dependence in terms of H. And knowing that background, we can just plug that into the action for the probe brain, which is the Dirac brain filler. We actually will use just the, without the F-minute term. And there is this also the Westermeier term, proportional to the string tension, that was the Ramon-Ramon form, and also the Q here is we'll just keep it as Q, but it will be plus one if we have here a brain, and minus one if it is an anti-brain. So we will concentrate mostly on the case minus one, but we could treat both at the same time, just playing with Q. I call coordinates X parallel to the brain, and Y the transverse one. So, in the standard way, we just keep the coordinates inside the brain to be x, and then we just allow the anti-brain to move in a rigid motion. So, in that sense, all the transverse coordinates, the only thing we assume is that they are just functions of t. So, we are just taking the whole anti-brain moving as a whole object. And when we do this, plug into this action for the probe brain, we get the Lagrangian looking like this, and this is the basic object that I will be discussing today. What is the physics of this Lagrangian, where H is again is the harmonic form, V is the velocity, just V squared is dy by dt squared, and N is just the tension of the brain times the volume of the brain. So, okay, so this is the Lagrangian that I will be working on.
Where is the
here, actually, it's inside K. Yes.
So you're doing this just classically?
Yes, fully classically, yes. So actually, the classical dynamics for this system, we can put, we can just compute the say the Hamiltonian and evaluate it at zero momentum, so get an effective potential. An effective potential will be 1 over h, essentially, times 1 minus q. So if q is 1, it's 0, which is as we expect for brains. And if q is minus 1, it's 1 over h. So it's different from 0 for anti-brains. So that's the interesting case. So this is about knowing the potential. We can take the limit, the non-relativistic limit, where the velocity goes to 0 and the radius goes to infinity. And so we do that into the Lagrangian that I had in the previous transparencies. We had that the Lagrangian reduces to the standard central force problem with a potential 1 over r to the 7 minus p, and I forgot to say that p is the dimensionality of the brain. That I'm assuming the two systems have the same, the two set of brains are the same dimensionality, plus a constant, which is usually relevant for this. So knowing this, we already get the information that since this is the standard central force Lagrangian, so we can say that for p equal to 6, we have the Kepler problem. So we know that in this approximation, the motion is just like the Kepler, closed and bounded orbits given by ellipses for p equal to 6. But for p less than 6, then we have different kind of potentials, and we know that the orbits will not be closed, but will be bounded. The question is if this intuition that we get from this non-relativistic limit can be can still hold in the more general case without taking the approximation. So that's what we asked. And then to do that, first of all, we realized that still several of the things for the general case are preserved. That, for instance, you consider the angular momentum, say, tensor being conserved, that implies that the motion is on the plane, so given by the initial coordinates and momenta. So that means that still the motion is on the plane. And because of that, we can work in polar coordinates. So then the Lagrangian we consider is this one. So you can see it's fully relativistic in the sense that for h equals to 1, we'll have the standard relativistic case. But it also includes r dependent.
M is the total mass.
Yes.
That's the area of the brain.
Yes, that's the volume.
M is not infinite.
Yes.
But so
M is a short. It's a short name for infinite. Yeah. Yes.
Well.
Yes.
If I remember that it's infinite.
You keep that in. Yes. You have to. Yes. That's the.
Before the mention of the field, it's just a scalar. The center of mass motion is the scalar field. The force is also infinite. So the kinetic time is infinite and the force is infinite.
Yes.
So you assume that everything is parallel to each other to start?
Yes, just the rigid motion of the brain.
Then are you going to ask whether or not that's a stable?
Yes. Yes. Yes.
So those perturbations on the brain?
Yes. Okay. Yes. I promise you. Yeah. Okay, so let me just be quick because it's a short talk, but. The thing that we can just treat this system and just take Goldstein's book and follow all the steps that he did for the Kepler problem, do it for this problem. And so we can find, well, the momenta are complicated. You have r squared theta dot divided by the square root, and that is constant for the angular momentum, but for the momentum associated to the radius, it's not a constant. And but it takes this form. We can compute the energy from here, and knowing that the energy is a constant, we can from here, and using the standard tricks of eliminating the momentum here in terms of the dr d theta, and naming a new variable u as people usually do in classical mechanics, you can do that and get the orbit. The surprising thing is that the orbit is identical to the non-relativistic case. So this is the same result that Goldstein writes in his book. For different values of the coefficients a and b. So to remind you, a and b in the standard Kepler problem take this form, 2e over l squared and 2k over l squared. But for us, it takes this other form. Well, besides that, the functional form is the same, And because of that, then we can solve. That's all. The problem is exactly solvable. So classical mechanics, we can solve this this problem, which is highly non-trivial, given that the original potential, I mean Lagrangian, was fully relativistic and for in principle for any values of R. So and so similar to the non-relativistic case, then we have the effective potential, including the angular momentum piece, looks like this. And so we know that if we have energies in this region, then we have bounded and closed orbits between two radii, and those are the elliptic orbits. Yes. No. Just to the only thing that in the standard case this was zero, so negative energies was the you couldn't go. The potential here was zero. So the boundary states were for negative energies. Well, here it just lifted, it's not zero. But functionally, it's the same. The physics is the same because it has functionally the same shape, the potential. Okay. And as I said, well, this is the plot of the effective potential, which is the total energy at the zero momentum, only radial zero momentum, but keeping the angular momentum. So it takes this complicated form, but this is the plotting. And so, okay, that's for p equal to 6. So p equal to 6 is the case, as we expected, the case similar to one particle in 4 dimensions because of co-dimension. In 10 dimensions, you have 3 extra dimensions. It's like a point particle in 4 dimensions. It's a 6 prime in 10 dimensions. And for p is more than 6, again, the effective potential looks like this. And this is the standard case in the non-relativistic case, where you can have bounded orbits but not closed. If you are in this, you start here, it's not the close at this. You can have some random motion, but at the end you hit the origin. You hit the origin. Right. That's it. Yes. So the other one you can expect the close orbit, but here at some point you hit the origin. And I'll be quick with this. So the closed orbits, you can do the integral. I won't bother you with all the details, but you can find the equation for the orbit in terms of the semi major axis and the eccentricity. They depend on the energies and angular momentum on this form. And so it's identical to the non-relativistic case, except for the expression for A and E. You can also compute the time evolution in this way, exactly as Goldstein do. So actually, we're following page by page of Goldstein here. And so you have here is the time evolution. You can read it in terms of omega, which is the frequency, times t equals to this function psi, and psi is related to r in terms of this equation. So psi is, I think, it's called the anomaly, eccentricity anomaly. And so this is an indirect way of relating r to t, so that tells you the time dependence. From here, you can compute the period of the orbit, which is 2 pi over omega, and it takes this form. And you can see it's different from the non-relativistic case, because non-relativistic case, the period was proportional to the square of the period was proportional to the cube of the semi-major axis. Well, here we have an extra terms. So that means that Kepler's third law doesn't hold. I mean, it holds in a different way. And the same thing happens with the second law of Kepler, because in second law of Kepler, r squared theta dot was the area that was being swept by the orbit, and r squared theta dot is the angular momentum in the Kepler's case, but it's not the angular momentum in our case, so it's not conserved. So that means that Kepler's second law is not holding here. The interesting thing is that, again, similar to the non-relativistic case, there is this Runge lens vector that you can define, it's similar to the expression that you can see in the classical mechanics books, except for the an appearance of the energy here. But since the energy is constant, then this whole vector is also constant. And that implies that you have an extra conserved quantity. And that is important because, well, let me say that there is also an extra symmetry in the Kepler problem, only for p equal to 6. And also this vector points in the direction of the semi-major axis. So that means that guarantees that the orbits are closed and there are no precessions. So there's no precession. So this is a standard thing. Yes, something I would like to emphasize, because this is non-trivial, being that the relativistic case is included in here, and the standard relativistic case doesn't have this this behavior. I will just flash this transparency just to to comment this, because just say, take that Lagrangian that we took and say, well, let's this is just a naive thing to do. You take that Lagrangian, take the Hamiltonian, and ask if there are a solution for h psi equals to e psi. And it so happens that the equation takes this form, and it's the Schrodinger equation for the hydrogen atom for p equal to 6, so you can solve it and get all the energy levels and all that, so which is kind of curious. Don't ask me about interpretation, but the only thing I can say is that the Bohr radius is proportional to the inverse of the energy, so it goes to zero for a very heavy brain. So that means that you're never in this quantum regime unless you have a very small mass. And so the mass, yeah. Okay. Then, well, if we want to do some four-dimensional physics, we have to solve the compactifications, and it's easy. You just take the this is case brain, which is the simplest, even the most interesting in this case. You have to compactify some of the parallel dimensions and some of the transverse dimensions, and be careful that the size of the extra dimensions has to be large enough to allow or the brain orbiting. And then you have to worry about stability. So there are several sources of instability. One is this bending that Shan was referring to. So you can have this is the picture you're having. So you have this bending there. So for that, you can consider the classical variations of the motion. And when you do a small perturbation, you get a system stable. So in that sense, that's not a problem. The real source of instability, one is the Takin. When you got this one very close to each other, then there will be annihilation by Takin. But you can avoid that by being far with the distance far away compared with the string scale. There's another source of instability that Juan and Callan consider in the past, which in terms of kind of a spherical behavior, but that goes like e to the minus 1 over g, which is if we have weak coupling. Yes? Yes, we have, yes. Let me address that later, yeah. And the other thing is this radiation. So the other source of stability is radiation, and that's actually the main source. It's like when you have a particle with a charge going around, that would be unstable. So that's the same thing here. We cannot avoid the brain having a charge, so it will annihilate. Yes. So, okay, so we have, by doing that, you can estimate, well, you can see the picture that the brain starts going around. At some point, it will start radiating. And when it radiates, it has to come down close to the string scale. And when you get close to the string scale, there's the stacking, and then the whole system disappears, and you get the supersymmetric system. You're left with only D brains there without anti brains. So that's the picture. And you can get estimate the power of radiation and the decay time, the number of orbits for a given decay time, and what is the ratio of radiation of the brains to the bulk and to the brain itself, which is very small.
What is the Bohr radius?
I'm sorry?
What is the Bohr radius?
Bohr radius, I'd show you 1 over the energy square or something. Yes, it's very...
Whether it makes any sense to consider like quantization of orbits and some problems with falling down?
Yes, it would be nice if we would be ever in the quantum regime, but since these are huge brains, it's always classical. Unless we consider the case that, for instance, at the early universe, you can be, all the dimensions are small and the mass of the brain will be very fine, probably finite, and you can be in that kind of possibility. But otherwise, yeah. So only in that regime you can consider the possibility of having something that the quantum mechanics will help you. Otherwise, this looks unstable as it is.
So, sorry, what rate changes as the length of the whole system
changes? Yes, I mean, the radius change is a function of the mass of the object. And the mass is infinite, as David was saying. if you have an infinite size, I mean, it's still proportional to the volume.
So if I compactify,
yes,
the circle.
Exactly. And then all the dimensions are compact, including the, because the brain is including all our space dimensions.
If all the dimensions, all the longitudinal dimensions are compact.
Yes.
How can I make it different?
Oh, because then the mass can be finite because the volume is finite. I mean, the mass is the tension times the volume. So then the volume is finite, so you can make it.
The force, isn't that exactly the same?
Well, the mass appears in the dimension like 1 over h bar.
Exactly. Yes, it's a factor like a minor h bar. Okay. And so let me just move quickly because now it's, I'm running out of time. Oh, that's okay. Yes. So now I can say some of the things about cosmology because that's what Shen was asking us to do. Is that what is it that we consider this system? The reason that we consider this system is that is this problem of brain inflation, brain anti-brain inflation. And the problem was that let me turn this off because probably better say this. The problem was that that you had the potential to be a constant minus b over y to the and for brain anti-brain inflation, this potential looks good as Shamin was mentioned the other day because it's relatively flat but goes like this. But if you want to compute the eta parameter for inflation, for this potential, you get it to be proportional to the ratio of r over y to a positive number, and r is the size of the extra dimension. So that means that this tends to be much bigger than one. So y is the separation of the brains, and r is the size of the extra dimension. So that's the problem. That means that this potential is not flat enough. So we thought at the beginning that this this consideration of not having the brain and anti-brain just going one through each other, but just going around, could help because it will delay the time that they will just collide. And so we put this into the background of, say, Freeman-Robertson worker and see what will happen. And it helps. So, I mean, good news and bad news. So it helps in the sense that the initial condition before you had to assume that the brains had to go to each other, but now Whatever they are, they can just get into the orbit. So it helps for them to get to the annihilation. So that's a good thing. The bad thing is that you get into the questions from this background, you get LA cubed. The thing that is conserved is not L, is not the angular momentum, but it's LA cubed, but A is the scale factor. Okay. Exactly. So since A, so for instance, you have EA to the E to the HT, so the angular momentum goes to a to the minus 3, so it's very fast, goes to 0. So you start going like that, and then you collapse. Okay. So it's you cannot avoid. So it's in that sense, it doesn't, we have been plugging this in with the whole system, and we have numerically, we had a picture here, which is just to illustrate how it happens, but it doesn't, you know, unfortunately, it doesn't work. So it would. Sorry. So you can see for different values of h, if h is small, it can go around several times, but it doesn't inflate very much because h is very small. When it starts, so when it starts getting bigger and bigger, then for h equals 1, it just goes straight. So there's no hope. So we can get at the most some phi defaultings of inflation, but not that much. So that is one of the things. The other, then there are also curious things. We can use this system for something else rather than inflation. For instance, you can, in the non-relativistic case, you look for what is the equation of state. You find p equals w rho, and ask what is this w for the orbital part of the orbit, and it happens to be minus three. Yeah. So the total W is okay. It's always between the range 0 and minus 1. But if you just concentrate, take out the cosmological constant piece and just concentrate on the orbital piece, and that will give you some funny behavior of W, which is, of course, this will show instability, and we know the system is unstable. So in that sense, there's no problem. And also, we played to put the induced metric on the brain to see how it looked like. And naively, it looks like it is a cyclic universe, because it starts just when you get closer, it contracts. When you get far away, it expands, and so on. But that is only in the string metric, so we haven't checked if this whole thing is preserved. Okay, so that's it is what I have to say. Thank you. Okay. I have to address your question. Well, the question about the background. Okay, so you're happy. Okay.
Okay. It's still a bit strange that you have this W equal to minus 3, because whatever the system unstable, whatever, typically this thing appears only if your kinetic energy is negative. Is your kinetic energy negative?
No.
Because usually,
Let me see. We have I can tell you, we have the rho is equal to the, so you take the cosmological constant piece plus the kinetic minus the potential energy, the orbital piece. And then P is the same thing, minus, what is it? Sorry, this is V. And if we use the Virgil theorem, I think K is equals to minus, in average, K is like minus 1/2 of V. And you plug that into here and take and forget about this piece, you get the minus 3.
What is kinetic energy minus
potential? Yeah,
that's the. Let me see. Did I get it wrong? I got it wrong. Precisely the other way around.
Positive. Kinetic energy of the linguistic system is always positive. It's okay. It's
sorry. Well, anyway.
In pressure.
Yes. I mean, the total energy is okay.
No, it's just.
But for the.
P plus rho, if it is greater than zero, then you have omega greater than minus one. So if you add one line to another, you have just two kinetic energies. And therefore, you need kinetic energy to be negative in order to have W equal to minus three.
Unless you have some negative potential.
No.
Combine those two equations.
Potentials cancel. When you add rho plus C, potentials cancel.
Yes.
Potential and cosmological constant, they cancel.
Yeah. I think you're right. Yes. It's, at the end, you can see it as that. Eh? Was this the real theorem? I forgot. That was the minus half here?
Yeah.
Yes. Because
minus
of that.
That's what you believe in
analogistically,
that B is negative, and it's minus 1 over 2 A, so
yeah.
K is positive.
Okay, so that's true. Okay, so
and
this is one.
If you just actually integrated with W equals minus 3, then you would get that the energy would go like A to the 6th power. And so that would say that the energy times the angular momentum squared would be constant. And that says the eccentricity of the orbits is constant. And when that was the case, they were constant. The eccentricity didn't change.
Well, I mean, this is a science theory. It's a real theory with a secondary issue.
Yeah.
Sorry, minus 3.
Check, looking at your...
It's minus 3. It's, yes, it's beyond the limit. Eh?